Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
All right, welcome everyone. Bienvenidos to another episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts, Adon Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
And we are beyond excited. We already started catching up with our wonderful guest, and I'm going to wait to introduce him because he's just somebody so special that we've known collectively, my mother and I, for many years. Of course, we're talking about James Osland. He has so many different cool titles. He's basically a food adventurer, if you will. He's a culinary writer. He's an editor, a television personality. He's done so many different things, amongst one of them being the editor-in-chief from Saveur magazine from 2006 to 2014. And we were just talking off air just about this beautiful new book that he has put forward that my mom and I are just so crazy about and have a love affair with. And it's called The World Food Mexico City. And it is just unbelievable. I have it here. And we've been kind of just playing around with it and showing it to each other. And my mom can't have enough superlatives to talk about how beautifully made this book is. And I just really, really have to commend James for this. He's going to speak about that shortly. But also one thing that I want to point out, he still has a Hotmail email, which is pretty cool. All right. You're going old school. I mean, you have a Hotmail email. Okay. So that right there in itself has already put you into a cool area. Okay. Maybe if you had Mindspring, you'd be the man. Okay. But anyway, so yeah, of course. And, you know, he's written for the New York Times. He's done so many different things. He's a regular judge on the Bravo television series Top Chef Masters, which we're not going to talk about that because that's my competitor. But anyway, but we're here talking about soup, okay, or sopa, caldos. And James is so well-versed on Mexican cuisine. He currently lives in Mexico City for the last 5 years. So he has a really good perspective on what's going on there, what's been going on there, the great variety and diversity of Mexico City. And he's going to speak to that. But we had to reel him in and talk a little bit about one subject matter, which is tough to do with James. But we're going to focus on sopa. So bienvenido. Thank you so much, James.
Gracias. I'm so happy to see you guys.
Well, let me just wax poetic a little bit about your book, because this is very important to the subject at hand. I just love the way that you have incorporated and weave in the recipes with the stories in a really different way. You know, you're setting it in a cultural context, which is what I love to do. You're bringing alive the life of Mexico City, which is just so varied, let's say, in all the different experiences from the high classes, low classes, as they say over there. But it's just wonderful. I mean, I just cannot tell you how much I love your book, and especially the soup chapter.
Which we're going to be focusing on today. And you're right, Mom. You know, Mexico City is the one place in Mexico that you can really have a taste of all the different regions in Mexico. And that's what makes it so special. But today, unfortunately, we have to focus on one thing. We'll have to have you back, but let's talk a little bit about soup, shall we? And I think, you know, once we're doing it, let's start with the basics. Let's have, James, a good definition, in your opinion, your humble opinion, the difference between sopa and caldo, because you'll find both, you know, sprinkled through Mexican restaurants and recipes. So.
So for me, sopa means that's your starter, that's your entrada. That's your palate yeah. opener, and the thing that takes away desperate hunger, which is something that occurs with me, with, like, you know, man, when I'm hungry, it's like I've got to eat. And when you come into a home for lunch, the main meal in Mexico City, really throughout Mexico, 9 times out of 10, you will be offered a sopa. when you sit down at the table. So a nice, beautiful bowl mm-hmm. of soup. And I'm going to tell you, when I first encountered that as a 17-year-old, first on my first trip to Mexico with my dad, my gosh, we went on a 3-week road trip. We drove from New Orleans, where my dad lived. We drove from La Place, Louisiana, all the way to Chiapas, the southernmost state of Mexico, over a 3-week trip. And, you know, prior to then, I had very, very limited context of Mexican food. And, you know, we got this incredible survey of it, you know, going through the whole country. And one of the things, I mean, there were many things that blew my mind and, you know, just completely, you know, defied my expectations. But there was one thing in particular that really blew my mind. Mexicans eat soup. They eat so much soup. They love soup. They're soup obsessed. Yeah. And, you know, I had no idea for that. So that's a sopa, is that thing that you sit down to. But then for me, caldo, that means I can make a meal out of it. Mm-hmm. For me, like a caldo is like, you know, I've got my stack of tortillas, my beverage of choice, and my caldo, and I'm good. I've got like a one-pot meal right in front of me.
Exactly. That's a great description. Go ahead, Mom.
Normally, the sopa, the caldo is called sopa aguada.
Sí. Mm-hmm.
There's a sopa guada, sopa seca. Have you heard that term?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that's what we call it. Because most of those blue plate specials start with a sopa guada, and then maybe a sopa seca, and then the entree.
And it's so confusing for people who just can't imagine what a sopa guada is, which is like what we in the States think of as a soup, like a liquidy brothy bowl of deliciousness in front of you. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then sopa seca is something entirely different, which is, you know, a really kind of starch-based drier thing, which doesn't make it sound so inviting. But when you eat a sopa seca, fideos and with chipotles, which is fideos or kind of pasta. Basically, it's a casserole. Mm. It's a noodle casserole. But, you know, sopa aguada, the liquid version, I mean, that's specifically the thing that really, really excites me and floats my boat.
I love that.
Do you have a favorite one?
A favorite liquid soup in Mexico? Yeah, I'll tell you. My favorite liquid soup, like a drinkable, delicious hot soup. My personal favorite is sopa de lentejas, a Mexican version of lentil soup. You know, it's just so
I love that.
Delicious when it's made well, and it's scented with a little bit of cilantro that has been cooked with the soup, and maybe even a little bit of bacon to give it that kind of earthy, smoky quality. And the lentils, you know, the Mexican variety of lentils, which are a little bit smaller than the ones we know in the States. They're almost more like the French Le Puy lentils. And they're so marvelous. And then when you add a dollop of a fresh-made salsa, you could add like a green salsa or a red salsa. It could be really hot or maybe not so hot, and you add that and you mix it into the sopa de lentejas, the lentil soup. That for me is just heaven on earth.
James, we're already in love with you, but the fact that you are bigging up the very humble lentil, I feel the poor lentil gets a lot of doesn't get a lot of love and admiration. So I'm so happy that you put it up on a pedestal. I think that's beautiful.
Do you know? can I ask a question? Do you know Minguichi? The tomato soup with a ground corn, which is perfect for this time of the year. It's tomatoes, and then you grind fresh corn into it.
I do know the soup. I've never made it. And you're so right. This is the moment right now because the ingredients are at their best.
Well, you can get it at my website, sarela.com. I have the recipe there.
Okay, Mom. That was nice and shameless. I love that.
I know.
The don't worry. But that's awesome. It is a good soup, Mom. I remember you have it on the menu for a long time. So let's just talk a little bit about the idea of where you get sopas en caldos, right? If you're in Mexico, obviously we're talking about the home. But traditionally, if you go to mercados, you'll have what you call fondas, or these sort of counter restaurants where they're usually located next to the mercado. And this would be a place that you would kind of, go seek this out, right? Apart from the home, because it's sort of that blue collar, and the restaurants too, but the blue collar folk can go get them at fondas necessarily, because I think they have a lot of soul when they're served to you in those little Peltrix bowls and you're having it there. I think those are beautiful moments. What did you agree, James?
Yeah, he has a big story about that in the soup chapter, don't you? About how you go get the soups at this particular fonda and they have all these toppings that you add to it, which is something that I was not familiar with, by the way.
Well, there is something that I write about in the book, which is, I think, what you're referring to. And, so I live in Mexico City, lived here for about the last 5 years. I usually keep food in the house. I work at home. My home is also a test kitchen. I write here, I edit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there is, there comes that occasional day of the week where it's like, I don't want to eat at home. I want a break. And I'm lucky enough to have, I live in the very center of the city, just a 10-minute walk from the cathedral and the main square, the Zocalo. And, there's a lot of activity around me. It's just it's incredibly dense around me with people and shops and restaurants and businesses and markets and just so, so much. But I'm really lucky enough to have a really excellent fonda, which Aaron was talking about, which is, a small little restaurant. It's almost like the fondas of Mexico City, and there are just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of these places. They're almost like they almost give you, the diner, the feeling that you're walking into someone's home, not into a restaurant. They're 9 times out of 10, mm-hmm. they're family run.
Exactly.
The entire family is there behind the counter. You go in, around 2 or 3 o'clock or maybe even 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which is the typical lunch hour in Mexico City. It's not noon. In Mexico City, dinner is not such a big deal. It's really sort of like the second or maybe even third most important meal of the day, but like lunch around somewhere between 2 and 4 is really important. And I'm lucky enough to have this great little family run fonda right near my place. Funnily enough, it's in the lobby of a bathhouse. And so they also provide meals for the people who are getting their Turkish bath upstairs. And this fonda is great. And, every day, like all fondas in Mexico City, they've got 4 or 5, maybe 6 different things that they make, main courses, along with different entradas. And so there might be a dry sopa, like we were talking about earlier, or a soupy sopa, a sopa aguada that Zarello was mentioning. And, for me, that day of the week when I go in and I walk into this place and I kiss the owner on the cheek and I sit down and she asks me, like, what would you like for your first course? Here's the soupy soups that I've got, and here's the dry soup or two that I've got. What do you want? For me, it's a really sweet moment when I'm bringing that first spoonful of soup to my lips, and it's like my desperate hunger goes away. And even better, Aaron, if it's like the lentil soup, and it's a little piece of heaven for me.
I love that.
Do you consider pozole and menudo soups?
I don't really consider those soups in the same sense that a lentil soup is, or another favorite liquidy soup is a soup that you'd make with it's a classic of Mexico City. It's fava beans, dried fava beans, and nopales, the cactus. So it's a fava bean and nopal soup, a fava bean and cactus soup. That for me, I'd say, is my second favorite. For me, pozole enters that wonderful area of one pot meal that you encounter in Mexico. And pozole is that, mm-hmm. you know, the hominy, and it's usually cooked with pork, and it's cooked for hours, and you've got all of these different toppings that are associated with it, and you eat it with, you know, often tostadas and crema, which you smear on top, and it's just, you don't need to eat for the next 3 days after, you know, you're on a pozole bender. Or another one would be like mole de olla, which is another favorite of mine, which is, you know, a just super, super classic, as you guys know, Mexican, Central Mexican in particular dish of pork or beef that's also stewed for hours, but it's got this, like, these dried chilies that are in it that give it this flavor that you never knew food could have. For me, those kind of dishes are so complicated and so substantial and so wonderful that a soup, like a lentil soup or the fava beans with cactus, that's just more like a palate tickler than anything. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even in the north of Mexico, they have a pozole blanco, which is very interesting, where you can put the sauces in al gusto, to your liking. You know, people are familiar with the red pozole and the green, but they make a white one, which is very interesting in the north. And you actually put cabbage on top of it and tons of radishes, which I think is really interesting, which is not very common. So let's talk a little bit about more other styles of sopas, right, Mom?
Well, you know, I have to tell you that my favorite story about a soup, I love caldo tralpeño, which is a soup that is flavored with chipotle. It has chicken breast in it. It has chickpeas. And, you know, when I first moved here, I ended up cooking at the Williamsburg Economic Summit, and, you know, which got me in touch with Michael Deaver, who was the chief of staff for Reagan. And Queen Elizabeth was going to visit the Reagan Ranch, and they wanted me to send a recipe. And I sent a recipe for caldo tralpeño and all the ingredients for them to prepare it at the ranch. I was supposed to go, but there were floods in California at that time, so I couldn't go. So to this day, that soup in my lingo is called Queen Elizabeth soup. And it is such a delicious, delicious soup. Do you encounter? That's from Talpa, honey.
Yeah, I know.
Caldo tralpeño is another.
Is that something that you have? I didn't know. I didn't.
It's a favorite food, and it feels like so Mexico City, you know. But the special thing about caldo tralpeño is, you know, it's I believe Zarela, it starts with a chicken stock, right?
Yeah,
but then
exactly.
It has this addition of dried ground chilies that are in it, but and oftentimes, you know, actual pieces of chicken or shredded chicken. But the really magical thing about this caldo tralpeño is the toppings. The toppings are such a, it's exquisite. It's so refined. You get these, you know, at their best, you know, this really fine strips of fried tortilla, you know, as a garnish. And then it could be cubes of avocado. And then it could be pieces of either panela cheese, which is like mozzarella, or queso Oaxaca, you know, that great string cheese. And then best of all, chipotles. Chipotles that have, you know, like the kind that we get in the can in the States, you know, either shredded or basically in the stock, or even added at the very end. I mean, it's just that soup is dreamy. It's just absolutely dreamy. You know, when you add up all of these components together,
it's really, and it's so complex.
So complex.
You know what I wanted to make a comment about the cheese. If you're using panela or Oaxaca cheese, it's not going to melt you know, and become greasy or anything. It's going to basically stay in shape. So when you bite into it, it'll be a little cube. You know what I'm saying? It won't be melted all over the
place.
Yes,
it's like you have a mouthful.
It'll be its own thing.
A mouthful of delicious cheese. It's not something that gets incorporated. And that's the amazing thing about all of those toppings is they carry on their wonderful, delicious individuality. You know, and you know, it's a magic food, caldo jalapeño. Mm. Although I do think of caldo jalapeño as kind of more of a sopa than a caldo, but that's maybe just me.
Yeah. I agree. No one's going to take you to task on that, James. I think you're absolutely correct. And I think something to mention too is Mexico is one of the few regions that actually has a lot of garnishes on soup. You know, where in other countries and other cuisines, you would just think of having, you know, something very monotonous, like a pureed tomato soup, mm-hmm. or a cream of something. Mm-hmm. And that repetitiveness becomes very boring to your palate. So when you're able to navigate a soup and a chowder with all these little crunchy bits and textures, it actually makes for so much more of a pleasurable experience. And I think that's really what differentiates Mexican sopas and caldos, you know?
You know what I find is very hard to do it in a home? It's a great fish soup.
Yeah, a sopa de pescado.
And, you know, totally about the garnishes thing. The garnishes thing, you know, one of the things that's so special to me about that is that it gives you, the diner, the possibility of making the soup that you want. And
exactly.
Even if, you know, garnishes in you know, on the table, garnishes on the table either, you know, to my mind, either go with a classic Mexican soup or something that's more substantial, like a pozole or a caldo, or, you know, a caldo de pollo, a chicken stew. But, you know, they all have these garnishes, which are this, it's like this little palette of flavor and texture that you get on the table right there. And so it could be, mm-hmm. it could be chopped onion, it could be a salsa, it could be pieces of tomato, it could be a bowl of halved limes, et cetera. It could be chicharron, you know, like it could be, you know, one of the things that I love in a caldo jalapeño, for example, is like, you know, if you're in a fancy restaurant, there's like a, you know, an amazing little mini plate of really delicious chicharron right there that you break directly into the soup, mm-hmm. and the chicharron softens just slightly, but at the same time, it retains its crispness, and it's just it's so freaking good. But even when you go back to my classic lentil mm-hmm. soup, you know, it's like you've got that salsa that you're adding to it. You mm-hmm. know, in our mind in the States, when we think of a garnish for a soup, it's usually not more than maybe just like a little sprinkle of pepper, or maybe, you know, a little cream or a little yogurt, a dollop of yogurt, yeah. but then it kind of stops there. And, you know, it's such an example yeah. of the brilliance of the Mexican culinary mind that, you know, that these things are done to a simple bowl of soup or stew. You know, it's so terrific for me.
Do you ever have plantains in your lentil soup?
That sounds so good. You mean like sautéed plantains? That's old school. That's kicking it super old school.
Yes, exactly. I know. Doesn't that sound yummy?
Like the yeah. combination
yes,
of
it
that
does.
Smoky stew and then the sweet little plantains? Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a traditional soup with that. So it is really old school, but it can become new school.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think well, we talked real quick about the idea of different kinds of caldos, right? And sopas. Mom, you brought up the idea of a fish soup or something that has shellfish. A couple of, you know, things that I think to keep in mind, you know, when you're peeling shrimp, and just some tips. When you're peeling shrimp, save the shells, freeze mm-hmm. them. Roast them, make a beautiful shrimp or seafood stock. Never let that go by the wayside. always try to put some tomato and some aromatics in your broths, and don't cook it for longer than 45 minutes to an hour. It starts to become bitter. And the same thing when you start to make a caldo or a sopa, you kind of just want to bring back that broth up to life and then add your little bits and goodies in there, and then just literally poach your seafood in there and keep it very light and refreshing. I think that would be one suggestion just from a culinary standpoint. You know, from the old chefy over here, the old chef.
Yeah, I find that it's very hard to make a fish soup at home.
Yeah.
You know, I've been trying to make bouillabaisse forever and I haven't been able to do that.
You know, one of the great, great ingredients, one of the great ingredients of Mexico that people don't really tend to be too familiar with, outside of the country is dried shrimp.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I know.
Dried shrimp. And what is called a sopa de camarón or caldo de camarón, like a shrimp soup.
Oh, yes.
The base of the stock are these, sun-dried shrimp that are slightly salty, slightly funky, slightly oceanic in their taste. And when you have the leisure of making, the base of a soup using these little dried shrimp, seasoned with some other complementary aromatics like white onion, garlic, again, that's cilantro, not chopped up, but like in a big old piece. So you're getting maximum flavor out of the stem of cilantro. It's this that stock itself, just on its own. If you're feeling ever a little under the weather, if you get a mug of this warm broth, this salted dried shrimp broth, it's really, really exquisite, and it's not really a flavor that people associate generally with Mexican food. Yet it's completely fundamental to the taste of Mexico.
Yeah, and it's typically one of those things that, dried shrimp you have during Lent, right? The tortitas de camarón you have during Lent. But I think that you're right, James. The idea of that flavor, I hate the word, when people use umami in such misguided ways, but that's a little bit of umami in there. So I'll give the umami moniker to that broth that you mentioned.
And, people didn't like that flavor until Thai food became a thing. Mm-hmm. Because it's a flavor that's very common in Thai food.
Mm-hmm. You're completely right. You're completely right, Zarella. And what's cool for me, like another place that I've lived abroad is Southeast Asia. I've lived off and on in Southeast Asia for 40 years, and it's a very, very typical flavor profile of all the cuisines of Southeast Asia, from Vietnam, Thailand, Burma, Malaysia, Singapore, vast Indonesia. You'll always find some ingredient that's kind of funky and tastes of the sea, the taste of the ocean, that's a key component of the flavor of the place. And it's a really, for me, a really cool, startling kind of overlap that you've got that same flavor here in Mexico, where you think like, oh no, Mexico has enchiladas and it's this and it's that. It's yes, it is those things, but it's also these other things that funnily enough also reflect other obscure flavors in other very far away parts of the world. Things like that always make me wonder, like, Maybe world food is really more connected than we think it is, because there's all these funny little overlaps that occur, and honestly, it's one of the reasons that I started this book series, World Food, and Mexico City is the first volume in it. But, as someone who's traveled and eaten kind of sort of everywhere for the last four decades, I was about to say four centuries. Sometimes it feels like that. But four decades of going everywhere in the world, has made me realize exactly what you just said, Zarella, where it's like, huh, that's so interesting that Thai food kind of tastes like Mexican food. And the idea is with this book series, you know, with enough volumes created in front of us, the first book is this one. The next book is about Paris, and that comes out in November. And then it goes on from there, not just cities, but also regions and countries. And, you know, what's so cool to me, though, is we think of foods of the world as being so different. But what's so exciting is how wonderfully similar and connected they are. It's a sort of joyous expression of humanity that you find in the foods of the world. And I love that.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
You know what? We have not touched on one of the favorite soups, cocido, or caldo de res.
See?
You know, which is a vegetable soup with, you know, with a marrow bone,
see?
The shin bone and the marrow in it. And, you know, in El Paso, the places where you go and there are 2 tables and people go and sit at communal tables just to have their caldo de res, either with rice or with chickpeas.
Now, and the idea is like the cocido, right? Does that stem from the famous cocido madrileño that you have in Spain, right? With the fideos and the butifarra and all the and the chickpeas, and you have in different courses. But that's interesting how that has permeated, you're right, Mom, to the north of Mexico, where you have your caldo de res and you have, well, sometimes we call cocido, but yeah, the idea of taking sort of cheaper cuts of meat, slow cooking them over a long period of time with that gelatinous shin bones and marrow, and just make this wonderful sort of complex, almost like pho, like Mexican pho.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Aaron. Yeah. Yeah.
My mom cooked the meat to a certain point and took out that stock, which is what she would serve on the plate afterward, the one which just really has a lot of flavor. And then she adds the meat back and finishes cooking and then adds the vegetables. So she always extracted the first really flavorful stock and saved it to put on the actual plate when she served it.
You know, you guys, that's sort of like, you know, honestly, it's kind of like exactly, you know, what I was thinking of or speaking about when I was talking about that weird overlap in Thai and Mexican flavor that people aren't really necessarily familiar with outside of Mexico. But it's the same deal with those kind of you know, the cocido de res, which is like a beef stew that's basically cooked for hours with some vegetables and some aromatics. And again, there would be the toppings. And then, of course, you know, there's another version that they eat, boy, a heck of a lot in Mexico City, caldo de pollo, which is a chicken stew, you know,
yes,
with pretty much more or less the same ingredients. But the thing is, you know, you're cooking that, these stews, all of them, what they share in common is you're cooking them so, so lovingly and slowly that you're extracting the essence slowly out of these ingredients, which is what makes such a complex and excellent tasting broth. But you'll find traditions of that throughout the world. I mean, my personal theory is that in the cuisines of pre-Hispanic Mexico, you'll find similar foods where, you know, really water and wonderful aromatics, and then some sort of protein is cooked for hours and hours and hours, which you'll also find it in Vietnam. You'll also find it in Spain. You'll find it throughout Western Europe. You'll find it in some of the, you know, some of the earlier, like 1800s American cuisines. You'll find it everywhere. You'll find it in China. There's something about the human instinct where we got fire, we got a pot, we got water, we got a protein, we got some aromatics to make everything taste better. Now let's just cook it for 3 hours. And it's almost like the essence of food is what you're eating there.
And you're going to take that chicken broth and put tortillas in it to make tortilla soup, which we also haven't talked about.
Exactly.
The Aztec soup. I mean, this is a subject that we could go on for hours.
Exactly. You know, and you know, one of the most exciting things about, you know, Mexican food, you know, I mean, I guess I kind of, yeah, no, I mean, definitely I was picking up on this. You know, as a 17-year-old, the first time I came here 40 years ago with my dad in his station wagon, and we drove to Chiapas and all that. But that every single thing you eat in this country, you can taste the past in it. You can either you're directly eating a dish that is fundamentally unchanged for thousands of years, which is so thrilling, or you're eating a food, you know, a colonial food or post-colonial food that has the addition of other ingredients and maybe other approaches to cooking and flavor, but it's still Mexican food because it has that always ancient underlay of food, of ways of thinking about food that's here in everything you eat. It's thrilling. It's absolutely thrilling. Mm.
And how lucky we are to have you bringing it forth, because you're doing it with such care and so much knowledge and so much background, where you can really situate it in a cultural context and in a world cultural context, which is very unusual for people to take that much care and have that much knowledge to put into a particular subject.
I agree, Mom. If I can second that, you're the exact reason why we do this podcast, is for people like you to come in here and share your vast well of knowledge. And we are so lucky and fortunate to have you. And I'm just throwing this out to our partners at Heritage Radio Network. Maybe do have James host his own show with the World Food series that you're going to put out with the books, and then have really cool guests that can speak to each one of those regions and those areas that you're going to be featuring in the series. So I think that would be a great idea. I totally have a man crush on you. I think you're amazing. And I think this is something that's so special. And you could have lived anywhere in the world, but you chose to live in our beautiful Mexico. And that to us, you know, is so special.
Well, we still have a little bit of time. You know, I want to share, I'd love to make huitlacoche soup. You know, and like a cream with huitlacoche soup,
yes.
and serve that in demitasse cups as an appetizer,
yes,
when people come in.
Yes.
And it's the best palate opener.
Super idea. And you know, Zarella, now is exactly the time. I was just in La Merced, you know, the great, vast market of the center of Mexico City, just 2 days ago, and there was just huitlacoche all over the place. And huitlacoche is that, you know, fungus that appears on the corn, and, you know, actually it's really shocking looking. It kind of deforms the corn, and it's like, you know, a nice, you know, yellow or white ear of corn will be covered in this gray mushroom like fungus. But the fungus is just so subtle tasting. I mean, it really is like one of the finest wild mushrooms that you've ever eaten anywhere. And a crema, making a creamed soup out of that is whoa, 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 whoa. And now is exactly the moment to do it. Because, you know, of course, in Mexico, you know, it's all about seasons. It's about what's available now. And the corn is big enough out in the milpa, growing up on the stalk. And you know, when it's lucky enough to get infested by this fungus, you know, which is just an accident. It's an accident of nature.
Spore. Yeah.
Yeah, it's spore. Exactly. It's just it's so interesting.
In Mexico,
I have a bag of it that I bought, you know, just for in the market just the other day, and I was going to saute it with some epazote and onions. And that's what I was going to have for my lunch today. So it's great that you bring it up.
Mm. And some roasted poblanos.
Yes, 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 yes.
You can also make quesadillas with it.
Yes, second best to the crema you just described. But, you know, I've got to say thank you so much for your words about, you know, about the book. And, you know, for me, it was no accident that the first book in this series was about Mexico City, a place that, you know, I mean, it changed my life. Coming to here as a 17-year-old, it was the first time I'd ever been outside of the United States, and to walk into the center of the city, onto the main plaza, the Zocalo, right next to the cathedral, and to go into the markets here and eat these foods that I never could have imagined as a little kid growing up in Northern California, you know, and to see these ingredients like huitlacoche that were so unfamiliar. It changed me. And, you know, before that, I had only been an armchair traveler. And the main way that I was an armchair traveler was that series that you were just referring to by complete coincidence, Sorella, the Foods of the World from Time Life. I used to have my mom drive me down to the library where in the town where we lived and check out volumes of Foods of the World. And when I was like a 14-year-old with these books in my lap, and they were, you know, books that were showing me these faraway food cultures, it was like, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to do with my life, was go everywhere, eat everything, study it, research it, find local cooks, mostly home cooks, to translate their vast knowledge and experience to others. And, you know, that's the goal with this series. You know, I'm not in the series at all. I'm a reporter. It's local writers, it's local cooks. It's an honor awesome. And respect toward their knowledge, a celebration of this vast knowledge. And I think it's very, very important in these times where food around the world is almost becoming kind of homogenous. We're eating the same pizza, the same pasta. We're using the same, you know, big corporate ingredients that we buy at the supermarket. This is a really fragile time in global history, and we really have to acknowledge our forebears all around the world. Absolutely. and the grandmothers who might not live forever, and, you know, the amazing knowledge that they have. We must carry on this knowledge. We must give it to the generations that will follow us.
Well, I tell all my readers and my that they have, if they have a grandmother who cooks, that they have to tape her, you know, put her on and record all her recipes, because you're going to want to have them one day, mm-hmm. or your children are going to mm-hmm. want to have them one day. Mm-hmm. That is the best heritage to pass on to your kids.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
But anyway, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real privilege and a lot of fun, which is, you know, also very important in this series of interviews that we do. But today was lots of fun and knowledge and everything else. And
well, it's a blast. And Zarella, what you guys offer is this base of respect and understanding about food that's so refreshing to hear in this context. So I salute you guys.
Thank you so much, and hope to see you soon. I'm going to be going to Oaxaca. I'm trying to buy a place there, so you know we can visit anytime. It'll be great to have you there.
Well, you gotta look us up in Mexico City. I can't think of anything better.
All right, darling. Thank you so much. Y hasta luego. And it was a real pleasure and a real honor. And I can't wait to see it live.
Ah, exactly. Hasta pronto, Zarella.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.